Baba threw an enormous party for my 13th birthday. Sitting in my room the next morning, I ripped open box after box of presents and several envelopes containing cash. I didn't want any of it. It was all blood money. Baba would have never thrown me a party if I hadn't won the kite tournament. Baba gave me two presents, a bicycle and a wristwatch. I didn't even try the watch on. When I went downstairs, Ali appeared.
The opportunity never presented itself last night for Hassan and me to give you this. We hope you like it. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Ali. I opened the parcel and found a brand new hardback copy of the Shahnameh, the book Hassan most loved me to read him.
Hassan said your copy was old and ragged, that pictures are hand-drawn in this one.
It's beautiful, I said, and it was. And I suspected, not inexpensive either. I wanted to tell Ali it wasn't the book, but I who was unworthy.
Thank Hassan for me, I said.
I ended up tossing the book on the pile of gifts, but my eyes kept going back to it. Before I went to bed that night, I asked Baba if he'd seen my new watch anywhere. The next morning, I waited in my room until Ali and Hassan had gone to the bazaar. Then I took a couple of envelopes of cash and my watch, and I tiptoed out. I crossed the yard and entered Ali and Hassan's hut. I lifted Hassan's mattress and planted my new watch and a handful of banknotes under it. Then I knocked on Baba's door and told him what I hoped would be the last in a long line of shameful lies. They'd both been crying. I could tell from their eyes. They stood before Baba, hand in hand, and I wondered how and when I'd become capable of causing this kind of pain. Baba came right out and asked,
Did you steal that money? Did you steal Amir's watch, Hassan?
Hassan's reply was a single word. Yes. I flinched as if I'd been slapped. I almost blurted out the truth. Then I understood. This was Hassan's final sacrifice for me. If he had said no, Baba would have believed him because we all knew Hassan never lied. And if Baba believed him, then I would be revealed for what I really was. Baba would never forgive me. And that led to another understanding. Hassan knew I'd seen everything in that alley. That I'd stood there and done nothing. He knew I'd betrayed him, and yet he was rescuing me once again. I loved him in that moment. Loved him more than I'd ever loved anyone. And I wanted to tell them all that I was a snake in the grass. I wasn't worthy of this sacrifice. And I would have told, except that a part of me was glad. Glad that this would all be over soon. Baba would dismiss them and life would move on. I wanted to start with a clean slate. I wanted to be able to breathe again. Except that Baba stunned me by saying, I forgive you. Hadn't he set me on his lap and said that theft was the one unforgivable sin? How could he just forgive Hassan? And if Baba could forgive Hassan, then why couldn't he forgive me for not being the son he always wanted?
We're leaving, Aha Sahib, Ali said. We can't live here anymore.
As the color drained from Baba's face, Ali curled his arm round his son's shoulder. It was a protective gesture, and when he glanced my way, his cold look showed me who he was protecting Hassan from. I realized Hassan had told him everything about Asif and his friends, about the kite, about me. Strangely, I was glad that someone knew me for who I really was. I was tired of pretending.
I don't care about the money or the watch, Baba said. I don't understand why you're doing this. Haven't I always provided well for you?
I'm sorry, Aha Sahib, but our bags are already packed.
Then I saw Baba do something I'd never seen him do before. He cried.
Please, I'll never forget the pain in Baba's plea.
Slithering beads of rain sluiced down my bedroom window as I watched Ali haul the lone suitcase carrying all of their belongings to Baba's car. I saw Baba slam the boot shut and walk to the driver's side. He leaned in and said something to Ali in the back. When he straightened, I saw in his slumping shoulders that the life I'd known was over. Baba slid in. The headlights came on and cut twin funnels of light in the rain. I watched Baba's car pull away, taking with it the person whose first spoken word had been my name. I stepped back, and all I saw was rain through window panes that looked like melting silver. There were about a dozen of us, sitting in the back of a tarpaulin-covered Russian truck, our suitcases between our legs. The driver was a people smuggler. It was a pretty lucrative business driving people out of Sharawi-occupied Kabul. He was taking us to Jalalabad, where his brother was waiting with another group of refugees to drive us across the Khyber Pass to Pakistan. I thought of the way we'd left the house, as if we were just going out for a walk. Dishes smeared with kofte, piled in the kitchen sink. Baba's suit still hanging in the wardrobes. A few items of clothing were missing from the cupboards, as was the leather-bound notebook Rahim Khan had given me to write my stories in. We hadn't told Jaludin, our seventh servant in 5 years. You couldn't trust anyone in Kabul anymore. We rolled into Jalalabad about an hour before sunrise. Then the driver informed us that for the next leg of the journey, we'd be hidden inside a fuel tank. Panic. You open your mouth so wide, your jaws creak. You order your lungs to draw air, now! The air was so thick, it was almost solid. I wanted to break it into pieces and cram it down my throat. And the stench of the gasoline! My eyes stung from the fumes. You could die in a place like this, I thought. And then a small miracle. Baba tugged at my sleeve, and something glowed green in the pitch black. Baba's wristwatch. I kept my eyes glued to the fluorescent green hands as the truck bounced from side to side and heads banged against metal. Think of something good, Baba said in my ear. I let my mind wander. Hassan and I stand, ankle deep in grass. Our eyes turned up to the kite in the sky. I'm tugging on the line. Hassan lets the spool roll. The kite spins, dips, steadies. Our twin shadows dance on the rippling grass. The rest of the journey is a haze, until the blinding light of the early morning as I climbed out of the fuel tank.
We're in Pakistan, Amir, Baba said.
My eyes turned to our suitcases. They made me sad. After everything Baba had dreamed, planned, fought for, this was the summation of his life. One disappointing son and two suitcases. Baba loved the idea of America. It was living in America that gave him an ulcer. I remember the two of us walking through the park a few streets from our apartment. Baba enlightened me with his politics. He loathed Jimmy Carter, whom he called Big Tooth Cretin. In 1980, when the U.S. announced it would boycott the Olympic Games in Moscow, he exclaimed,
Brezhnev is massacring Afghans, and all that peanut eater can say is, I won't come swim in your pool.
What America needed, he said, was a man to be reckoned with. And that someone came in the form of Ronald Reagan. Most of our neighbors in Fremont were bus drivers, gas station attendants, and unwed mothers collecting welfare. Baba was the lone Republican. The Bay Area smog stung his eyes, and the traffic noise gave him headaches. The fruit was never sweet enough, the water never clean enough. He missed the sugarcane fields, missed people milling in and out of his house,
missed walking down the bustling aisles of the bazaar and greeting people who knew him and his father, knew his grandfather. For me, America was a place to bury my memories. For Baba, a place to mourn his. Maybe we should go back to Peshawar, I said. We'd spent 6 months there waiting for our visas. You were happier there, Baba.
Peshawar was good for me. Not good for you.
I reached across the table and put my hand on his. My student hand, clean and soft, on his laborer's hand, grubby and calloused. I thought of the train sets and bikes he'd bought me in Kabul. Now America. One last gift for Amir. Just 1 month after we arrived, Baba found a job as an assistant at a gas station. He was determined not to live on welfare. 6 days a week he pulled 12-hour shifts pumping gas, changing oil and washing windshields. In the summer of 1983, I graduated from high school. At 20, I was by far the oldest senior tossing his motorboard on the football field. I remember losing Baba in the crowd. He was wearing his only suit, the same brown suit he wore to Afghan weddings and funerals, and the red tie I'd bought for his 50th birthday that year. When I found him, he motioned for me to wear my motorboard and took a picture. I smiled for him. In a way, this was his day, more than mine. He curled his arm round my neck and gave my forehead a single kiss.
I am muftakir, Amir, he said.
Proud. I liked being on the receiving end of that look. We went to a kebab house and then a bar across the street. He treated everyone to drinks. Baba always knew how to start a party. When we left, everyone was sad to see him go. Kabul, Peshawar, California, same old Baba, I thought, smiling. I drove home in his old Buick.
Keep driving to the end of the block, he commanded.
He had me park at the south end of the street and handed me a set of keys.
There, he pointed to the car in front of us. It needs painting, and I'll have one of those guys at the garage put in new shocks. But it runs.
I took the keys, stunned.
You'll need it to go to college, he said.
My eyes filled with tears. Thank you, Baba. He smiled and leaned back against the headrest.
I wish Hassan had been with us today.
A pair of steel hands closed around my windpipe. I rolled down the window, waited for the steel hands to loosen their grip.